things I'd never seen back there on that farm. She set my soul on fire, she fulfilled all my dreams. A boy became a man that night in the arms of the Memphis Queen. And I saw stars dancing on the water. I heard Elvis singing blue suede shoes. That old Muddy River was my witness. The night I fell in love with the Queen of Memphis. Just like that old man River, she keeps rolling.
ABC News, this is a special report on the collapse of the Baltimore Bridge. I'm Michelle Franzen. Search and rescue efforts continue for six people unaccounted for 12 hours after the cargo ship slammed into a support pylon of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing the metal span to collapse. President Biden speaking at the White House says federal aid is on the way and that so far no indication of foul play.
Everything so far indicates that this was a terrible accident. At this time, we have no other indication, no other reason to believe there's any intentional act here.
The ship sent out a mayday before it struck, and authorities say it also appears the ship may have lost power at some point. ABC's Terry Moran is near the scene.
Synergy Marine Corp is the company that owns that ship, the Dolly. They have reported that all of their crew members and pilots on board that ship are safe, but rescue efforts continue for those lost when that bridge went down.
The collapse also impacting shipping. No ships allowed in and out of the port for now. This is ABC News. The family of a child who drowned in a hotel swimming pool in Houston filing a lawsuit demanding accountability.
The DoubleTree Hotel in Northwest Houston features a 350-foot lazy river that flows in a large rectangle around a deck area. It was there that 8-year-old Aaliyah Heiko and her family were enjoying a day of swimming. When the child disappeared, her parents asked the staff to check security video, but said the managers refused. Hours later, Aaliyah's body was found. A lawsuit claims she was violently sucked into a 16-inch pipe where she drowned. Her family's lawsuit claims gross negligence and demands $1 million. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
More fast food restaurants are laying off workers in California ahead of the state's minimum wage increase, which takes effect next week. The new wage will be $20 per hour. Some restaurants are reportedly planning to close during slower parts of the day to save costs, while others plan to hike prices. I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
The good folks at Wendy's have a revolutionary new product for you. Introducing the new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. It's like a time machine that takes you all the way back to now, the year 2024. It's the classic, creamy, orangey flavor you remember. Dare I say, it's new-timey. It's the flavor you grew up with, just all grown up. Head over to your local Wendy's establishment and get yours while supplies last. The new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. Here for the now, for now.
Limited time only at participating Wendy's.
Don't you love an extra $100 in your pocket? Have a TurboTax expert file your taxes for you by March 31st to get $100 back instantly. Because no matter what moves you made last year, TurboTax makes them count. That means getting $100 back and 100% accurate taxes only from Intuit TurboTax. Must file by 3/31. Credit only applicable to federal filing fees with TurboTax full service. Offer can be modified or terminated at any time.
Wisconsin Radio Network News. I'm Ted Ayling. A man from Texas died over the weekend while cleaning a water tank in west central Wisconsin. The Trempealeau County Sheriff's Office says Carlos Medina of El Paso was in scuba gear and a wetsuit cleaning sediment from the city of Blair's water tank Saturday evening when he repeatedly told his co-workers he was getting cold. After an estimated 45 minutes in the water, the co-workers believe Medina entered a hypothermic state and lost his hand mobility. As they tried to remove Medina from the tank, he became tangled in a suction tube used to clean the tank. When first responders arrived, Medina was 6 feet under the water and not moving. Despite life-saving efforts, the 30-year-old Medina died at the scene. The Department of Natural Resources is taking public comment on a new elk management plan.
Biologist Joshua Spiegel says they've been working closely on the plan with farmers in the central region of the state.
We kind of wanted to make sure that we were addressing all the concerns that were previously brought up to kind of formulate this rendition of the draft management plan.
Elk have been doing damage to cranberry farms. You can enter your input online at dnr.wi.gov. Just search for elk. Raymond Newport, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Wisconsin First Responder comes to the rescue in mid-flight. Lake County Fire and Rescue Assistant Chief Matthew Herder was on a Southwest flight from Milwaukee to Arizona on St. Patrick's Day when a passenger on board lost consciousness halfway through the flight. Herder stayed with the man for 2 hours more until they landed in Arizona, where emergency crews were waiting. Herder told Fox 6 Milwaukee anyone in his position would have done what he did.
It would have been something that probably could have gone a different direction if the individual had not been treated in the way that they were.
Soon after, Herder found an email on his phone congratulating him on 30 years as a paramedic. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
Wondering how to choose from all your spring break options? Pop quiz. Is your family into monkeying around, airbending on a flying bison, or diving into slime? Or all of it? Mall of America. Go bananas on the new Boots Banana Swing Ride. Take to the sky and fly with Appa. Then get slimed in the Nickelodeon Universe Slimulator. For the littles, cosmic crafts, and more at Crayola Experience. It's the spring break of choice at Mall of America. MallofAmerica.com/spring.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Snow this afternoon as temperatures fall to near 27 degrees by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Winds are feisty, whipping up to 30 miles per hour, and snow accumulations look to stay under an inch. Keep in mind that everything wet will flash freeze overnight, creating slippery surfaces. If you owe back taxes, call Tax Solutions now, 1-800-281-8193. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovi at Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
Dr. Justin Smith from the Kansas Department of Ag. Then it's Justin Tupper from the U.S. Cattlemen's Association. And later, Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition. Directly following the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chap Lorre.
All right, Davis. Hey, welcome back, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
I won't say what I was doing.
That's 50, fine.
50-ish year old people out there probably could ballpark what I was doing yesterday.
Well, you took a day off.
That's right. That's right.
And you mentioned a clean bill of health.
You got to do it, people. It's no fun, but you got to do it. You got to take care of yourself. That's all.
That's exactly right.
A little public service message. Wow. I'm all
Look
fired
at
up
you.
This morning.
Look at you being the fine example of health.
Mm-hmm. I'm helping people. I'm trying to improve lives, if I can.
I get it. Dude, yeah. One of the first things I saw when I woke up earlier than normal this morning was this bridge collapse in Baltimore. What? Number one, catastrophic. Number two, terrifying.
Oh.
There were workers on that bridge.
Yes, there were.
There were cars traveling on that bridge when it collapsed, and I don't think they've got a really good idea of exactly how many people were killed in the collapse of this bridge, but we're still finding that out. Obviously, we need to take a look at it from the perspective of how much impact might it have on ag trade.
Sure.
And so we're going to do that with Mike Steenhook at the end of the show. Bird flu in the dairy herd.
Yeah, man.
We're going to talk with Dr. Smith from Kansas Department of Ag coming up here in just a little bit. And then we'll talk about some other cattle issues with Justin Tupper from U.S. Cattlemen at the bottom of the hour.
Big show. Big show.
It is. It
a lot
is.
In there.
Absolutely. Let's get to it.
Well, let's start with the National Weather Service weather outlook, where a winter storm comes to an end over the northern and central plains and upper Midwest. Well below average temperatures over the Great Plains are expected. Severe weather potential over parts of the Midwest and central Gulf Coast today. Heavy to excessive rainfall over portions of the southeast and mid-Atlantic. Unsettled weather returns to the northwest on Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, it is below normal temperatures that are expected, but it's not like it's February and we're looking at below normal temperatures. It's right. The end of March.
Right.
We can handle this.
We'll live.
Yeah.
USDA revised its outlook for food prices, expecting lower increases compared to previous forecasts. The consumer price index for all food now projected to rise by 2.5% in 2004. That's down from the previous 2.9% estimate. Prices for food away from home, this is restaurants, anticipated to increase by more than 4%. That's actually a decrease from the previous forecast of 5%. Grocery prices are expected to increase by 1.6%, consistent with February, which reversed 2 months of declines in grocery prices. Now, Chip, specifically,
yeah.
USDA predicts a decrease in pork prices by 1.6%, a decline of 1.8% for fish and seafood, and a 1.2% reduction in dairy product costs compared to 2023.
Yeah, this is part of the affordability conversation that you and I have been having for months.
Yep.
And I was at the grocery store last night, and it's still real. When you easily put $60 in three bags and get up and walk out of there, it's pretty crazy.
Well, and here's part of the thing. Cocoa futures topped a record at $10,000 per ton, extending a historic rally that's already seen prices double
get
this
your-
year.
Get your Hershey Kisses now, huh?
Get them while you can.
Yeah.
Gas prices expected to surge to $4 a gallon. That's the highest level since the summer of 2022. That's due to rising oil prices and supply concerns, according to AAA. David Gladden, the spokesperson for AAA, anticipates this increase will prompt Americans to make lifestyle adjustments and become a focal point in the upcoming November presidential election. Currently, Chip, national average gasoline price right around $3.54 per gallon.
Yeah, as a seller of products to consumers across the country, the last thing you want them doing is making a decision of, am I going to put gas in the car or am I going to put food on the table?
Yep.
And that's what they're talking about.
Yep. We mentioned this at the top, but Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed into the river after being struck by a cargo ship approximately 1:30 a.m. local time. Local fire department reports suggest approximately 20 people and several cars may have fallen into the water as a result of the collapse. The White House noted no indication of nefarious intent. Sounds like they lost power or something.
Yeah, on the vessel.
On the barge,
yeah.
Well, China has filed a complaint to the World Trade Organization over U.S. rules that block electric vehicle manufacturers from sourcing materials from China and other foreign adversaries. Beijing is challenging the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act. It calls it discriminatory. Meanwhile, U.S. and British officials yesterday filed charges imposing sanctions and accused Beijing of a sweeping cyber espionage campaign that has allegedly hit millions of people. Chip, over to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hello, Chip.
Hey, you've been to a lot of meetings this winter, including the DFA annual meeting. What are the major trends that the industry is preparing for?
Well, sure. I was in Kansas City as well, Sioux Falls last week. And really what's happening is the landscape of dairy is going to look drastically different come by 2030. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean that there are going to be fewer farms, Chip. DFA said that they did a member survey. And they've been doing this the last couple of years, and they shared that they'll have 5,100 farms in the next 5 years, which this will be drastically different because now they're over 10,000 members. So just less milk. And so less milk, of course, is not just a DFA thing. I want to make that clear. But with fewer farms, milk will have to be moved further distances from, you know, one plant to the farm. Mm-hmm. And as we're moving milk, Chip, it's really important that we know that producers are doing a good job, but it really needs to be rich in components because, let's be honest, moving water is expensive.
Yeah.
So, and when I went to Sioux Falls, Valley Queen, which is a large cheese plant up there, is increasing its capacity by 3 million pounds a day. And the thing is, a decade ago, they would have to go procure for that milk, go out west to California. And that's no longer the situation. Basically, they talk to their producers, and the producers, of course, are eager to grow. Just a lot of growth happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Cutting the membership of DFA in half, basically,
yeah,
is what they're talking about, Karen. It, it, you want to talk about drastic change and I don't know if you call it growing pains or what for the industry going forward, but there's going to be a lot of change, isn't there?
There is. I mean, you know that there's a lot of smaller farms that are, you know, hey, when I hit retirement age, I'm going to be out. But when you've got $16 milk, that doesn't really make you want to stay in the business long term.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Karen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Chip.
Get more on that at www.dairyherd.com. Coming up next, we're going to talk about bird flu in the dairy herds, Texas, Kansas, maybe New Mexico. Dr. Justin Smith from Kansas Ag.
In the beginning, there were soybean plants, and something big was about to happen. Except it didn't, because stresses like heat and drought struck during the flowering stage, preventing bloom and so much more. But then Agroxene said, "Let there be Smartfoil." And the big bloom came, because Smartfoil is a biological foliar application that increases pod count and yield potential by reducing abiotic stress. So bloom big in 2024. Ask your retailer about Smartfoil by Agroxene or visit bigbeanbloom.com to learn more.
At FBN Finance, we know there's one thing that unites all farmers: progress. It drives them to wake up early and be better than the day before. And whether it's a new land purchase or refinancing your ranch, FBN Finance has the agricultural expertise to help you reach your goals. Simply put, FBN Finance puts farmers first. With great rates, instant approvals, and pre-qualifications on farmland loans, FBN Finance has everything you need to be your partner in the fields and with your finances. And now, you can get $500 off closing costs for loans over $250,000. Start your farmland loan today at fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND. That's 833-FBN-LEND. FBN Finance, more than a lender. Financing offered by FBN Finance, LLC and its lending partners. Available where FBN Finance, LLC is licensed. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS ID 1631119.
All right, let's see here. Acuron Corn Herbicide. Powerful weed control? Check. Long-lasting residual? Check. Proven crop safety? Check. Acuron checks all the boxes, which is why it outperforms and outyields all other corn herbicides by 5 to 15 bushels an acre. Talk to your local Syngenta retailer or visit findmorebushels.com to discover your revenue potential today. Always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted use.
Stay clean and dry while doing chores around the farm with waterproof gear from UtterTech. From waterproof bibbed overalls, aprons, pouches, jackets, and more, UtterTech has the workwear to keep you clean, dry, and working efficiently on the farm. Just machine wash and dry, and your UtterTech workwear is ready to go for the next day. UtterTech has products for veterinarians, poultry, swine, goat farmers, and even kids, too. See all the UtterTech products designed to help you on the farm at UtterTechInc.com.
Get more with Stein. When it comes to soybean breeding, more generations equals additional yield. 2.2% more yield per generation. By introducing more new genetics faster than any other seed company, Stein delivers on the Stein Has Yield promise. For elite genetics paired with simple, flexible, and effective weed control, plant Stein Enlist E3 soybeans. Stein Has Yield. Yield plus advantage. Learn more at steinseed.com.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad you're with us this morning on this Tuesday morning. Last week, we started hearing about some mysterious disease that was making its way into some herds, dairy herds. We were focused on Texas, a little bit of attention paid on New Mexico and on Kansas. And we find out yesterday, get confirmation, that we've got highly pathogenic avian influenza making its way into dairy herds, Texas and Kansas, and potentially New Mexico. New Mexico was mentioned in a USDA press release on this. We need to figure out what is going on. And joining us to help us do that is Dr. Justin Smith. He is the Kansas Animal Health Commissioner at the Kansas Department of Agriculture. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
We're doing well, Joe. Thank you very much. And again, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you folks.
You bet. Glad that you're here. Glad you're here. Okay. As I understand it, there's two herds in Kansas that have been confirmed with the HPAI. Is it still at two herds?
Yes. From what we understand right now, they're the only two herds that we've got a definitive diagnostic result back out of them that did find the influenza virus within those herds. And so there's a lot of testing going on, continuing to go on, but those are the only two herds at this point in time.
Okay. Are there other suspect herds?
So I won't call them suspect, but there are other herds that are showing clinical symptoms that is consistent with the syndrome that was first identified. So, yes, we do have some other herds in the state that are showing those, but not necessarily would be considered suspect at this point in time.
Okay. What are those symptoms that the cows are showing?
So right now, the lead symptom is that we start seeing these cows go off feed a little bit. Their ruminations, their activity tends to go down just a little bit, as well as then we will also see a dramatic decrease in their milk production. So as these cows progress, their milk production goes down tremendously. Some of them will continue to it adversely affects them for long term, but most of those cows will tend to come back and recuperate back in 8 to 10 days, somewhere out there at that point.
Okay, very good. This doesn't sound that much different than other illnesses that make their way through a dairy herd, Dr. Smith. I mean, guys are kind of used to dealing with situations like this. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly right. I think that's the key here is the subtlety of it and the way it came on. And frankly, there's nothing out of the ordinary that they're seeing other than maybe the number of cows that have been affected in a short amount of time within any one dairy.
Okay. What cows are most susceptible?
Well, right now, preliminarily, it looks like those cows that are what we call mid to late lactation cows. Maybe some of the older cows in the herd have been the ones that's primarily showing the symptoms at this point in time. But there's a lot of work being done now to try to better discern exactly what populations and other cows. We just know that those cows are the highest producing cows in the deal, so they're the ones showing the most adverse effects at this point in time.
Okay, very good. We're going to get into the production. We're talking with Dr. Justin Smith, the Kansas Animal Health Commissioner. The impacts on production, how much of the herd is being infected?
Well, we're hearing reports that somewhere up towards of morbidity or those number of animals that are affected being somewhere up around the 10% range, between 8 to 10% on some of these more affected dairies. That's kind of been where it's been at as far as the reports we're hearing so far.
Okay, so the impact on production, while not insignificant if you've got it, but overall, it seems like it's a manageable situation.
It is, and our dairies are doing a great job of managing it. They really are. Uh-huh. But no, to your point, it is. Other than, we've seen some fairly significant milk flow or milk drops, production losses in some of these cows. And so when you put it over 10% of some of these larger dairies, it is impactful as far as the number of pounds of milk that they're actually producing. But it is something that the dairies are able to manage and have done a great job of.
Yep, good. Okay, thoughts on the source of the virus. Is it the wild migrating bird population, or are these farms that might have had HPAI in birds on the farms, chickens, ducks, or even sparrows and pigeons?
So, yeah, great question. We're continually doing more investigation as we are right now, and a lot of the preliminary work done in Texas, we're about a day and a half behind them here in Kansas as far as results. Okay. But yes, the DNA testing that they're doing on that virus is making it consistent with the flu that's in these wild bird populations out there. And so we assume that the same is the case, but there is additional work being done, additional things. But right now it looks like it's a wild bird incursion on our dairies, whether it be from the blackbirds or that they have on a dairy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because there's that goat up in, at least one goat up in Minnesota that has HPAI, and it sounds like they had a backyard flock of something, I think ducks, that was infected, and they were sharing a water source and had common areas. It doesn't sound like that's the situation with the dairy herds at all, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, okay. To our knowledge, there's none of these dairies that are being affected have any kind of a population of birds or poultry on their facilities as well. They're attuned to the dairy world, and that's where their efforts lie. And
yep.
So,
biosecurity. Biosecurity's high on their list, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. These guys, they have stepped up their security, that, you know, like I said, they have it in place on a day-to-day basis, but they've definitely stepped up that component of it.
Yep. Is there any evidence of the cow-to-cow or mammal-to-mammal transmission?
There's no evidence as of right now. They're doing some genetic work on that, on the virus itself, and it's what we call mammalian markers that do show that give it the opportunity to pass from mammal to mammal, and they're not finding any of those markers in this virus at this point in time.
Okay. If they're not finding that, then I would suspect the evidence or risk of cow to human transmission is low.
Very much so. There is no evidence whatsoever that this virus is ever mutated to the point where it can become a human health hazard. So, we're very secure in that component.
Okay. Let's make sure that consumers understand some of the risks that they might be facing if they go out and buy a gallon of milk. How is that milk from a cow that is sick with HPAI treated, used?
So that milk does not enter the food chain. That milk does not enter our consumer milk. That milk is held. Any milk that is deemed to be not look appropriate, if that cow is sick, has a fever, whatever, they'll hold that milk, and they don't put that in the normal food chain or the normal milk processing part of it. But the other thing is that our milk does go through a pasteurization process. So if there happens to be, you know, the bacteria or viruses in there, that we know that pasteurization will inactivate those viruses, and influenza is one of those. And so, if they're going through, you know, raw milk is still one of those things that does present us a lot of concern. You know, raw milk has never been a safe product to consume, in my opinion. And so we want to make sure that people understand that, you know, there's nothing about raw milk would facilitate maybe people need to reconsider their consumption of raw milk. Let me say it that way.
Yeah. 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 There's a reason that we pasteurize. This is the bottom line.
Exactly. Exactly.
What do you do if you suspect that you've got an animal, a cow or other mammal on your farm it might have HPAI?
So right now, I mean, they're normal processes that we're asking these dairies to do, and they do it anyway. I mean, it's to isolate that animal, you know, put it in the hospital situation, treat it appropriately, support it, you know, symptomatically, you know, like I said, pull that milk. They're not adding that milk to the process. You know, if they do have concerns, we've encouraged them to give us a call. But there is no component to this right now that is requiring any kind of a regulatory oversight at this point in time. We got our ears to the ground and listening, but at the same time, we haven't put any kind of restrictions whatsoever on the livestock industry in the state of Kansas.
Okay. We've only got about 40 seconds left, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this. Is there any modeling that suggests what dairy should prepare for, how serious this might be?
Well, I'll be honest, this caught us all a little bit by surprise. I mean, we knew we had something out there, but there hasn't been any indication that it's been in the ruminants up to this point. And so this has caught the industry a little bit by surprise, and they're starting to look at that now.
Dr. Smith, boy, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. We certainly appreciate it. Great conversation, and don't be surprised if we call you up again and try to get an update, okay?
Most definitely. Appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. That is Dr. Justin Smith, Kansas Animal Health Commissioner at the Kansas Department of Agriculture.
When we told growers that Bayer Premium Trifold Herbicide for Corn delivers visibly clean fields for up to 8 weeks, they were a bit skeptical.
We'll see how it works.
So we decided to prove it. We set up cameras in multiple cornfields, treated them with Trifold, and filmed for 24 hours a day. For 8 weeks, we saw a variety of weather conditions, and Trifold worked. See for yourself at TrifoldInAction.com. Trifold is a restricted-use pesticide. Consult your state pesticide regulator for specific restrictions. Read and follow pesticide label directions.
Farmers are the heartbeat of rural America.
Congress recently invested $20 billion in America's farmers and ranchers, focusing on conservation practices and profits for future generations. Today, these funds are at risk.
You're squawking over $20 billion. That USDA program, it's investment into the future for everybody.
If the funding was eliminated, it could hurt farms and families.
Tell Congress, protect this generational investment in the Farm Bill. Learn more at investinourland.org. Paid for by Invest in Our Land.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Max Armstrong here. The demand for nitrogen has never been higher. Fortunately, Pivot Bio has transformed the way fertilizer is produced and used by farmers. Unlike synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, the cost of Pivot Bio Proven 40 is every bit as consistent as its performance. And since it's applied in furrow at planting, it's weatherproof.
To learn more, contact Bauer Seeds in service in Durand, Wisconsin. Call 715-577-8541.
Double-digit gains in the milk markets with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnekins. At the Mercantile Exchange, April milk up 20 to $15.95, May up 22 to $16.54, June up 17 to $17.21, July milk up 18 at $17.90. Meanwhile, live and feeder cattle markets continue to move mostly lower as the trade continues to sell off after the cattle on feed report showed an increase of 10% in placements. Hog futures found strong buying interest yesterday and eliminated the losses of the second half of last week, and hogs are once again moving higher today as they extended the buying interest. April live cattle down 97 cents to 185.22. March feeder cattle down 67 cents to 248.77. April hogs up 45 cents to 85.60. Meanwhile, at the Chicago Board of Trade this morning, corn markets are relatively flat this morning, while soybeans and wheat are moving mostly lower. Now, we don't have a bullish fundamental story that's strong enough to run with, and we don't have any types of bullish weather stories at this time. And the lack of the bullish fundamental or weather is keeping traders somewhat cautious and reluctant to chase rallies. May corn now up 3/4 to 438.5. New crop down 1 to 473.75. May beans down 6.25 to 1203. New crop down 5.25 to 1193.5. May wheat in Chicago down 0.5 to 554.5.
Efficiency is critical for your farming or dairy operation, so extending the life of your equipment, walls, flooring, and machinery by adding plastic liners installed by Osseo Plastics and Supply only makes sense. Plastic liners wear longer than steel, and they clean up fast. The call to Osseo Plastics will save you valuable downtime and lower repair costs for years to come. Make the smart choice and call Osseo Plastics and Supply. Have them help you become more efficient with your money and time with plastic liners and resurfaced equipment and flooring from Osseo Plastics and Supply.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. And MLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
Patients or sponsors, our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know? Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. We're going to continue conversation about the bovines and some of the issues impacting cattle. Right now we've got Justin Tupper. Justin is the president of the U.S. Cattlemen's Association. How you doing, Justin?
Really good, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You'd be doing better if feeder cattle weren't $4.50 to $6 cheaper on the board here today.
You know, really, doesn't it really indicate what the problems are in our market? We hit all-time highs in the fed cattle market this morning in Yankton, South Dakota, in a live cattle auction, $1.90 for 1,770-pound fat steers, and we're down $4 to $5. Crazy stuff.
It really is. And you know, crazy stuff happens at a market when you're at all-time highs or at all-time lows. As I understand it, Oklahoma City auction yesterday on feeder cattle were, you know, $3 to $4 cheaper. Not the kind of price pressure that we're showing here today. What are you hearing from feeder cattle?
You know, and I think we're a little bit isolated out here in western South Dakota, especially the grass cattle market. Last Friday here was dollars higher again. Yeah. Seven weight steers that were green enough for grass at $3. So, you know, the bigger ready for the feedlot kind of cattle, I think probably are seeing some pressure just because of those all time highs and the volatility we're seeing.
Yeah, but it's not like we've changed anything in the market, have we? We haven't suddenly gotten a big increase in the supply of feeder calves.
No, but the funds have decided they want to go the other way. So that's the way our market is left with so few actual buyers in the market. Yeah. This is something we've been working on a long time. There's a lot of downward pressure. Everything in industry is pressure on the market at all times. And we've done everything at the CME to take out the buyers. We haven't enhanced or done things to make them want to be buyers in the market. So we depend on these big fund markets to move it. And when they decide they want to move it, they can do it.
Yep. Got to have a natural long in the market. There's no question about it. And with the way that the Packers manage things on the cash side right now, there isn't a natural long. And so when the rug does get pulled out, it gets pulled out for dollars, not cents.
That's right. And I think you hit the right on the head. We used to count on the Packer to be that buyer because he knew that that was going to be his hedge, and they just don't do it that way anymore.
Right, right. Exactly. Okay, let's get an update on what's going on with the electronic IDs, because on the appropriations bill, as I understand it, Justin, there was some funding in there for the electronic for the electronic ID tags. What's the situation here?
Well, and it's a great question. You know, there has been funding out there in the past 3 to 5 years at USDA for some electronic tags for trials. I know in Wyoming and Montana, they handed them out as banks tags, and they paid for them. The government paid for them. Is this what that is in that appropriations? We don't know. It's not earmarked to tell us what it's exactly for. So like everything in big government, it's very difficult to find the bottom and the end result of it. But, yes, there definitely was some funding in there. Congressman Massey has really been trying to flush that out. But there's nothing that says exactly what it's going to be used for, just several millions of dollars earmarked for electronic IDs.
Yeah. You know, and part of the problem by not putting specifications with that funding is there are real concerns in the industry that eventually the EIDs might be mandated, correct?
There's no question that's what the concerns are. Can we flush out and say that's exactly what's going on here? I don't know that we can definitely say that, but you know, it doesn't look good. The optics are tough, and it's kind of the way government works, and we don't like it, but it's what we are stuck with.
Right, right. And you're right about the optics on this one, Justin, no question. We should know exactly what that $15 million is all about. And if it, you know, the concerns over if the EIDs do become mandated, all of a sudden there's the ability to track emissions. And if we get to the point where there is a carbon or emissions tax, if the cows are carrying the EID and the electronic IDs, they're going to know exactly where to go to tax for the emissions, right?
That's one part of it. I think the simple thing with the mandated EIDs is who controls the data, and whoever controls that data, there's immense amounts of power there. You and I have talked about it several times, and I think that's where the power struggle is right now. I think a lot of people believe it's inevitable that we're going to go to that eventually. We're not one of them at U.S. Cattlemen. We think the marketplace is the way to do it. If EIDs are something you use to enhance the price of your livestock, so be it. Good for you. But to tell everybody that's the way you have to do it, we sure don't think that's in any way, shape, or form the way the free market is supposed to work.
Yep, right, right. And, you know, there's probably some people out there that are thinking, hey, what's the big concern over this? You know, well, all you got to do is look over to Europe and see how they are, some of the measures that they are taking to control that cattle herd over there. And it you know, raises the hair on the back of your neck, doesn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I mean, all of these things, when we start talking about these credits, carbon credits, and there, be very careful as an industry. It may look good on the front side, but there definitely is ulterior motives on the backside of those things.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, just have your eyes open on this one.
Yeah.
And understand what motivations might be out there. I don't think there's any question there. Okay, let's talk about a win. Congress actually delivered a win for cattlemen. There was a Senate resolution to turn back a USDA's or the Biden administration's decision to restart the imports of fresh beef from Paraguay. That's a significant win, Justin.
Absolutely. It's fun to talk about a win. And with what's going on in Texas with the avian flu and the dairy and whatnot, this is definitely a concern. I mean, just opening up our borders because they were happy and went with us on the Ukraine deal, it is not a way to protect and safeguard our herd here in the United States. And we've got to make sure we work hard to do that. U.S. Cattlemen's has been on this issue from the very beginning. We really applaud Senator Rounds and Senator Tester. I mean, 75-25 in the Senate to go against the Biden administration on this one. We've had calls with the secretary to no avail, so this became the only avenue. And a lot of people told us we were nuts and said, Senator Rounds, Senator Tester, this won't happen. Well, it did. And now it's going to go to the House, controlled by the Republicans. Hopefully we'll move quickly and we can make sure that we safeguard our herd. It's a win for consumers and producers on this one.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand that when we talk about the imports from Paraguay, the big concern here is animal disease, foot and mouth disease in particular. USDA has gone through the process of, you know, clearing the path for beef to come from Paraguay to the U.S., but it happened 10 years ago. If you want to clear that path again, let's update the status of Paraguay and how they're dealing with the disease, correct?
No, you are spot on. And you know, just look around the arena and their neighbors. They've been bad actors in this industry before.
Yep.
So 10-year-old news stories or 10-year-old we've been in there and inspected their plants 10 years ago is absolutely not sufficient evidence that they're doing the controls and the protocols that we do here. And, you know, I get asked this a lot on some of the news deals, you know, well, you're trying to be an isolationist, and that's absolutely untrue. We'll take on anybody in this market. We believe that we raise the best product out there. We just want to make sure it's on a fair and even playing field. And when they can cheat the standards and do the things that they've done over there and proven to do, that's not an even playing field, and we're always going to fight against that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, if we're going to feed U.S. consumers the beef that they want, imports, while they might sound like a dirty word, it's how we're going to maintain beef demand through a period of unbelievably tight supplies here in the U.S. Have I got the right read on that?
Well, I think you do, and I think it is paramount for us at this time to make sure that our standards for those imports are high.
Yes.
One of the things that will kill demand faster than anything is if we have an outbreak of some sort or the product not being as good. And that's what we need to protect. We do have tight supplies here. We are going to probably need to import some. That's part of life. We don't like it necessarily, but it is what it is. But let's make sure that is a quality product and it's a safe product. And the labeling issue and the Biden administration kind of talking out of two sides of their mouth here. They want a byproduct that's made in the USA. They said that that was in their directive. And yet we can't label our own beef. They won't work with us on cool. And now they want to bring in this stuff from Paraguay that doesn't meet the same standards as us. So we've definitely got to be vigilant in these times. I think a lot of times people get complacent when things are good. And I think that's probably the most important time to get active is when things are good and make sure that we keep it that way.
There you go. Nailed the message right there, Justin. Need to stay vigilant on this one. That is absolutely paramount. We let disease into this country through some imports, and people will question the safety of beef every day and every time they go to McDonald's. Can't let that happen. Good stuff, Justin. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Chip, and thanks for what you do.
O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find a repair shop with our shop referral program. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
ZipRecruiter's smart technology can quickly scan thousands of resumes, helping you find qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bob. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Bob. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Bob. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Pluto TV won't cost you a thing because everything is free. So if you want to watch Braveheart, Mean Girls, or The Price is Right, well, The Price is Right. It's free. Just download the app, which, by the way, is also free. Pluto TV. Stream now. Pay never.
Don't miss Power Torque Tools DIY Days now at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Power Torque hand tools come with a lifetime guarantee. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Take steps to live a more sustainable lifestyle by investing in plastic-free food storage containers like silicone sandwich bags or beeswax wraps, which can replace the difficult-to-recycle single-use plastic wrap. And while we all do our part, Charmin is working hard to make a difference by regrowing 2 trees for every tree used. We all go, why not enjoy the go with Charmin? Whether it's the irresistible cushiony softness of Charmin Ultra Soft or the superior strength and absorbency of Charmin Ultra Strong, either way, you can't go wrong.
Pluto TV won't cost you a thing because everything is free. So if you want to watch Braveheart, Mean Girls, or The Price is Right, well, The Price is Right. It's free. Just download the app, which, by the way, is also free. Pluto TV. Stream now. Pay never.
Steve Sturkey is the head of product strategy for North America at Golden Harvest. He joins us right now. Steve, it's an exciting time for Golden Harvest. 50 years in the field, man.
50 years, yeah. It's fun to be a part of something that has been a, you know, big staple for ag in North America here. So, yeah, Golden Harvest.
You know, 50 years, along with that comes some responsibility to be a leader.
So Golden Harvest, you know, its roots, it's always been rooted in agronomy and always had that as a basis. But what we've been able to do over the last couple of years and really transform how we bring genetics to the market through Golden Harvest has been pretty critical and exciting. I mean, this is a fun time right now with all the changes that have been made because we made that big investment just a few years ago and making sure that the genetics were supported and the traits in the way that we needed to be. This is the first year that really we are feeling the impact of that. And so that's what we're pretty excited about. There's some big proof points right now.
Yeah. Pipeline's full, isn't it?
Pipeline is full. We've been able to, over the last couple of years, bring 36 products to the marketplace, which is pretty exciting. What I'm most excited about is, so Viptera, which we know is one of the leading traits for above ground control out there, we've been lacking the last, you know, several years, and being able to bring that to our customers, that's changing. We've increased to where 2/3 of our offering this year will be in that Viptera trait. I mean, that's a big change from where we've been. I mean, that's 179% increase over where we've been. So that's really offering some true value.
So here we are talking with the head of product strategy. What's got you most excited about the future?
Most excited is we've been talking about for the last few years, these investments that we've made.
Yeah.
We're done talking. The most excited is that our growers through Golden Harvest will be able to actually experience what we've been talking about for the last few years. It's here. It's not coming. It's here.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Steve. That is Steve Sturkey. He is the head of product strategy for North America at Golden Harvest.
In the beginning, there were soybean plants, and something big was about to happen. Except it didn't, because stresses like heat and drought struck during the flowering stage, preventing bloom and so much more. But then Agroxene said, "Let there be SmartFoil." And the big bloom came, because SmartFoil is a biological foliar application that increases pod count and yield potential by reducing abiotic stress. So bloom big in 2024. Ask your retailer about SmartFoil by Agroxene, or visit bigbeanbloom.com to learn more.
Go on the offensive against weeds with Antares Complete from Helena. Antares Complete eliminates early weed competition with long-lasting residual control of broadleaf weeds and grasses. With a balanced premix of three herbicides, Antares Complete combats herbicide resistance and helps soybeans achieve a faster, more vigorous start to the season. Take a tactical first strike against weeds. Protect your soybeans early with Antares Complete. Always follow label instructions and check registration before use. Contact your Helena representative to learn more.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. If you're like me, you woke up this morning to reports of what happened in Baltimore with the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. A container ship somehow ran into one of the supports, and that bridge absolutely collapsed. And we are not being cold to what's happened here. The lives and families have been torn apart, and this is a devastating situation. But we need to take a look at what it might mean to agriculture and operations back here in the Midwest, and helping us put some perspective on that right now is Mike Steenhoek, the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike, it's always good to talk to you, but doggone, not in this case.
No, it isn't. And, you know, it's just a real sober reminder that obviously there's the human loss of life. But, you know, our ports are, this is where all of the global commerce, it originates or is destined to. And while our oceans are very vast and expansive, it all just kind of narrows down to these particular locations, both in the United States and around the globe. And so it's a point of vulnerability for us. And so obviously that can be disrupted by weather events. It could be by an accident. It could be by an attack. And obviously we don't know we know it caused the bridge collapse. But we don't know the cause of that power outage. But it really is just a reminder that these are things that must be a national priority. And I'm not saying that it isn't, but it's a real poignant reminder that this needs to be at the top of the list. And a lot of people don't think about ports and supply chains and all of these things, but you know, when something goes awry at one of these ports, it really has quite the echo.
You know, and you are absolutely right. And that's very well said, Mike. But it is surprising to me after what we went through in 2020, 21, and even into 2022 with some of the port disruptions that that consumers experienced coming out of COVID. My goodness. We're talking about everyday activities being fed by what is coming in and out of those ports. So with that in mind, I wouldn't think that the Port of Baltimore is going to be all that important to agriculture trade. But tell me, how much trade happens through the Port of Baltimore?
Yeah, it's not very significant when it comes to agricultural exports. So soybean exports, about 200,000 is a good rough number of metric tons of soybeans are exported from the Port of Baltimore. That's in via containers. They really don't have bulk exports to speak of. Well, you compare that to the Mississippi Gulf region near New Orleans, 35 million metric tons of soybean exports in that region. So that's our number one export region. So it doesn't accommodate a lot in terms of agricultural exports. There's some soybean imports that actually occur to the Port of Baltimore, but they, so it's not a big launching point for agricultural exports, but it is consistently the leading port for the importation and the export of automobiles as well as light trucks. So again, it's this whole kind of story that it really has an ramification on the broader economy.
Okay. Let's stay on ag here for a second. Where do soybeans fit on the list of ag trade products through Baltimore?
Well, it's actually listed. This is kind of combined exports and imports, just the amount that they handle. Sugar is number one for Baltimore, but then soybeans are number two. Grain products, which includes corn and wheat, number three. And then you've got coffee and then grocery items, which are more kind of the finished food products. So again, it's not, again, when you look at some of these other port regions, it's not significant when it comes to ag. That's a part of their portfolio, but you know, it is important, and it's all a part of this big issue that when it comes to supply chains, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. The more you can spread your eggs across multiple baskets, the better you are, the more resilient you are. And so it's really we obviously take real concern when you've got a major disruption at one of our ports.
Right. Okay. You mentioned all the exports out of the Gulf. We've got to have an artery that feeds beans to that that supply down there at the Gulf, and that artery is the Mississippi River. What's the status, Mike? I've seen it very recently, and it looks low to me.
Yeah. So the water levels are such that you're not seeing barge transportation really impeded. But then when you overlay that where we are right now with like the historical average, we're way at the low end of the bell curve and maybe even a little bit under the bell curve as far as where historically we are at this time of the year. So what that tells us is it's not going to take a whole lot of dry weather for that all of a sudden, for those drought conditions to manifest themselves once again and have an impediment to barge transportation. We are certainly not in a position of strength. We're in a position of weakness right now. Yeah. And so again, it's not going to take a whole lot to get back to that scenario, which obviously we hope we avoid. Glad to see some rain in the Midwest. Yep. Obviously we need more of that though. Cause the ground still is quite dehydrated.
Yeah, Mike, that's the thing. Last year proved to us that a spring flush and the second highest crest on record in some areas on the Mississippi doesn't solve the problem. You've got to have consistency in the moisture supply and the rain supply, water supply to the Mississippi to have it function the way that we need it to.
Yeah, to try to dig yourself out of drought conditions, it's not just about volume of precipitation. It's how prolonged and over what kind of time horizon that occurs. So that's really key as well. So we obviously need that over the course of some time in the weeks to come.
Absolutely. Mike, thanks, buddy, for bringing some perspective to what's going on out there in Baltimore. We certainly need it. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Mike Steenhook, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. All right. Wow. What an event that is happening out there at the port of Baltimore. We will continue to monitor that situation. Thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Brian Grady with the results of Pearl Farmers 2024 planted acreage survey. And tomorrow morning, Emily Score from Growth Energy will be here. And of course, we'll have a farmer forum right here on AgriTalk. This is Chip Laurie with another Appetite for Pork report. Dr. David Newman with the National Pork Board works to put more U.S. pork on tables around the world. David, how have pork checkoff dollars turned into new business in foreign markets?
With help from the U.S. Meat Export Federation and matching funds from the USDA, the checkoff's working to drive the demand with international customers. The big win in 2023 was in Mexico and Japan, which are both long-term customers for U.S. pork. Those activations have resulted in the addition of millions of pounds of U.S. pork sales going into foreign markets.
What's next is you're trying to reach new customers for U.S. pork.
Continuing to offer up the fresh, high-quality U.S. pork around the world.
Thanks again, David, for talking with us today about how the Pork Checkoff is building a bigger appetite for U.S. pork. You can find more information at porkcheckoff.org/pork. Radio.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. 120,000 miles of night drives, daily commutes, and who knows how many.
Are we there yet?
Through countless fixes, elbow grease, and a new radiator, you kept your ride alive. With eBay Motors, you have over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that feeling sluggish or weighed down could be a sign that your digestive system isn't working at its best? Taking Metamucil every day can help. Metamucil Fiber